Good morning and welcome to the Lodestar podcast news in brief. We're going to be rounding up the supply chain news from week 16. And at the start of the week, we reported on the news that the White House said it was excluding electronics such as phones, laptops and semiconductors from its 125% tariffs on China. Trump said that the administration was taking a look at semiconductors and the whole electronic supply chain in the upcoming national security tariff investigations. Now, the timing of these proposed investigations is not clear, which has left shippers in this vertical a bit frenzied. Although I don't know if there's a vertical out there that doesn't have frenzied shippers at the moment. I'm joined by Alex Linnane. Alex, what happened?
Hi, Charlotte. Yeah, there have been a lot of concerns, but for now, the sector is being let off from the main Chinese tariffs, as you say, but they're still subject to the so-called 20% fentanyl tariffs. But the reprieve is not expected to last very long. In fact, more information was due to be published last week, apparently, but nothing yet has come out of the White House, which I expect is facing some lobbying from US tech companies. It's expected, though, that there could be something of an electronic early peak as companies rush to get goods into the US before any new tariffs are announced. Now, the peak for electronics is generally September to November, so that would be really pretty early as peaks go. Now, mainland China accounted for more than 80% of US imports of smartphones, 2/3 of laptops, 14% of components and 13% of other network devices in 2024, according to S&P Global Market Intelligence. So it's quite a big issue, frankly, for American companies. It's not just electronics, actually, it's waiting for its new tariff bucket, as Trump called it. The pharmaceutical sector is also waiting for the same thing. So that will be an interesting one to watch.
So much complexity with each vertical having its own tariff bucket.
It's ridiculous.
I think one big theme of last week in response to all of this was it seemed like shippers were either rush importing or halting shipments altogether. And one group who was firmly in the latter camp was Hong Kong Post. Can you explain a bit more about this, please, Alex?
Yeah, sure. This came quite out of the blue. In fact, most things are coming out of the blue at the moment. But yes, Hong Kong Post put out a really quite punchy statement for a corporation. It said it refused to collect tariffs on behalf of the bullying US, and it would stop sending parcels to the US with immediate effect for surface mail and from the 27th of April for airmail. And it added that Hong Kongers should be prepared to pay exorbitant fees to post goods to the US. It's hard to know exactly what this will mean in terms of volumes. So data that we got from analyst TI shows North America accounts for about 12% of Hong Kong Post volumes in 23-24. And overall, it sent 1.317 billion items. So it suggests that 158 million parcels are going from Hong Kong to North America. Although it is North America, we couldn't find the US figures. It looks as if China Postal Airlines will be the main carrier impacted by this. We have asked Cathay, but they've not replied to us. And for those people looking to the integrators instead, FedEx and UPS have both added surge charges to parcels from China and Hong Kong to the US. So there won't be any relief there for e-commerce sellers and SMBs. In fact, according to a survey by Freightos of American SMEs, they're really stressed, unsurprisingly. They've got cash flow concerns. They're worried about being forced to close their businesses or at least cut products from their offerings. 1/3 said they'd pause shipments entirely. Another 29% were looking for alternative sourcing options. Well, the same percentage is going for the wait and see strategy.
Well, on the ocean side, it's also unclear whether the strategy is to be front-loading or halting shipments, or perhaps both. We had reports that one group who were rushing to get shipments in were Asian exporters, who apparently were in a frenzy to secure sufficient containers and shipping slots from locations in Asia, while the 90-day tariff pause is still in effect. Obviously, this does not include China. And the report stated that some are hoping to get a year's worth of stock out. I'm now joined by Gavin Van Mull. Gav, what do you think? Is this going to prompt an early peak season?
It's really hard to tell, frankly. I mean, the stuff produced by Container Trade Statistics that we use as our sort of industry volume bible, so to speak, those figures won't be available until May. But you're right. I mean, in the initial period after the 90-day pause announcements, there did appear to be a rush out of Asia, as you say, non-Chinese bookings for US shipments. If we go back to the beginning of last week, there was a pretty widespread consensus that the 90-day pause would basically, those 3 months could well be the Trans-Pacific's 2025 peak season. And certainly some of the carriers appear to think that, because you know, both Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd have announced peak season surcharges into North American ports out of Asia.
Any excuse?
Quite. Charlotte, it's so difficult to get a sort of grip on what's going on at the moment. I've been immensely frustrated over the last couple of days. Woe is me, right? But it's really, really confusing. So, you know, yes, there seemed to be an initial rush to book cargo, get it into that 90-day window. But then we had subsequent reports last week that there'd been a 30 to 60% decline in bookings ex-China and a 10 to 20% drop from the rest of Asia. I'm just going to try and give you some context for what could or couldn't be true, right? So the CTS container trade statistics data for February shows that China shipped around 750,000 TEU to the US and the rest of Asia shipped around 650,000. Obviously, February's a rather weird month because it's shorter, it has Chinese New Year, but I'm just using this as an example to show what they respectively make up in terms of trading volumes into the US. So let's assume that Chinese demand basically halved in April. That's sort of midpoint of the estimates, right? And then let's also assume that demand from the rest of Asia is now down 15%. This is just base assumptions, but it gives us something to work on. So that would mean altogether, the Trans-Pacific trade could lose 475,000 TEU, let's round it off at 500,000 TEU, in the course of a month. And in that respect, it's very difficult to see a peak season happening when suddenly so much demand has been sucked out. In China and the rest of Asia combined, you're probably talking a 30% fall in the demand.
Well, like you said, it is all very uncertain. It's very hard to get an actual read on things. So yeah, imagine trying to ship your cargo in light of all of this. We did have a report from ITS Global Supply Chain VP Paul Brashear, who was concerned about what would happen after any expected front loading had run its course and tariffs kick in, or are set to anyway. And he said to brace for a sharp slump in volumes next month and possibly into June, that we'll see a cliff event similar to the impacts felt during the immediate COVID response. And he predicted that the longer this trough lasts, the higher the likelihood of a sharp surge in import orders are that could hit supply chains similar to then what was experienced in 2021 to 22. These are all, of course, predictions because there is so much uncertainty. But I was reading your Loadstar Premium article last week, and I found it really interesting because, I mean, obviously there's never a good time for supply chain volatility, but you wrote that this could not have come at a worse time. Can you elaborate on that?
So, I mean, the key point here is just the very exact timing of all of this is, as we really, mid-April, we ought to be nearing the end of the contracting season on the Trans-Pacific. This is right at the time when the shippers and the carriers are, you know, firming up their minimum quantity commitments on behalf of the shippers and the rate levels on behalf of the carriers. And the carriers also agreeing, you know, how much space they're going to allocate individual shippers. How on earth are they supposed to do this when trade policy, I mean, I'm real serious air quotation marks here, changes every 5 minutes. The thing is that Trump has injected so much uncertainty into the market that many shippers might have no idea what volumes they'll be shipping. And equally, carriers don't know how much capacity they need to offer them. I mean, it's just absurd. On top of that, you then have a structural overcapacity that the liner shipping industry is facing. But the really, truly horrific scenario is if the US decides that it's going to implement the proposed US Trade Representative 301, the $1.5 million per port call fee on Chinese-built vessels. If this fee comes in, it's going to mean fewer port calls in the US. And that, in turn, means more volumes into fewer ports. And that's irrespective of what happens to volumes as a result of the tariff. And that will almost certainly mean port congestion in those hubs, which in turn will mean higher costs for everyone. then have a hugely toxic combination of low volumes, high cost. Goodness knows what would happen then to US consumer prices. So reluctance to sign an annual contract thus means being reliant on the spot market for whatever volumes you may still decide to ship. But we have absolutely no feeling at the moment whatsoever as to how the spot markets are likely to behave. So there's just no way for shippers to sort of logic this one out, you know, and you don't make business decisions based on gut instincts. Look, here's another one. Freightos, just done a shipper survey. One US importer told it was facing $46,000 in tariffs on a single container.
Wow.
That's just unsustainable. Trade doesn't happen at that. That's where you stop trade.
I mean, yeah, this whole contracting thing is really, really confusing at the moment because, like you said, it's pricing that's uncertain, but also volume. So there's both sides of the equation. Yeah. No one knows. I went to a Zenitor webinar and their CEO, Patrick Berglund, was saying that this huge overcapacity and low demand will mean that carriers will do all they can to keep rates up, resulting in lots of surcharges and GRIs, which he said felt artificial. And we did see a few peak season surcharges and GRIs come through last week. We are yet to see if they'll stick, but what are the rates currently looking like, Gav?
The reading for last week's World Container Index, the Asia-Europe legs, both to North Europe and to the Mediterranean, were down by 2%. Shanghai to Los Angeles was down 5%, and Shanghai to New York was down 7%. When we use these rate indices, give ourselves a bit of visibility into the trade, and it gives us an indication of how the various external factors that we notice, whether it's capacity or demand or whatever, we use the rate to see what effect that they've had on actual pricing. With something like the tariff flip-flopping, along with the other sort of existential threats that the White House seems to be levying on global container supply chains, it's very difficult to see whether these rates actually tell us anything at the moment. I mean, the WCI is very specific. Collects prices on the route between Shanghai and Los Angeles. It doesn't collect prices on the routes, say, between Busan and Los Angeles or Tokyo and Vancouver, you know? And given that we might well have seen a 50% drop-off in demand over the last week out of Shanghai to LA, it's rather dubious as to how relevant the rate indices are at the moment. Sorry, just on your point, about the peak season surcharges, I mentioned those. One thing, they won't have any effect on the trade for a month because obviously the FMC pricing notification laws means that carriers have to announce these price increases 30 days before they can take effect. So we won't know for another month whether they'll stick or not. And who knows where we'll be in a month's time.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very much a weird scenario right now, but it's not just ocean freight stakeholders in a limbo. Our news editor, Alex Whiteman, has just come back from IATA's World Cargo Symposium in Dubai, and he reported that air cargo is also in this wait-and-see mode. Delegates there apparently heard that demand growth last year for air cargo as a whole hit 11.3%, but for this year, there is only a projected growth rate of 4-6%, and that's according to the International Trade Center. I would also like to add here that our coverage of the World Cargo Symposium 2025 is sponsored by Etihad Cargo, the national airline of the UAE. So a huge thank you to Etihad Cargo for their support. But despite this uncertainty that's in the market right now, Alex Whiteman reported that the general sense at the opening of the WCS was that world trade would pull through and talk of the end of globalization may have come a bit too soon. Data company Avian said that what we are seeing is slowbalization and that trade is growing slower than GDP. Panelists at WCS concurred that trade would look to shift markets to make up for the loss of business that may occur if the US does indeed hold firm on its tariff pledges. And while the outlook for volumes this year look pretty uncertain, Alex, you had reports about which airports saw the most cargo in 2024. What were the results of this?
Just briefly, Charlotte, on WCS, Alex also told us that there was a bit of disappointment at the conference in Dubai on two levels. One was technology, and I've been to a couple of very modern conferences, and you'll know that it's very different to an air cargo conference. And some technology people said that the sector felt like it was still in the 1990s, which is a complaint we often hear about air cargo conferences. They also said there was a lack of cohesion in what people were saying. Willie Walsh, for example, said everything would be okay. That's IATA's director general. And IATA's economist said everything wouldn't be okay. So, you know, there's some confusion. Anyway, back to the airports that you actually asked me about. There wasn't much change in the top 10 airports. It's just a provisional list from ACI for now, for 2024. There wasn't much change. So Hong Kong took the top spot, followed by Shanghai, while three US airports took the next three places. So FedEx's hub at Memphis, Anchorage, which sees a lot of Transpac e-commerce, and the UPS hub at Louisville. But given the makeup of the top five and their kind of reliance on each other, it'll be fascinating to see how the numbers change over the course of this year. The 2025 figures could be really interesting.
And finally, we reported last week that the conclusion of the International Maritime Organization's Marine Environment Protection Committee, that's MEPC 83 meeting, meant to establish robust mid-term decarbonisation measures, ended with a disappointing conclusion after a vote which was the IMO's first in over a decade, a watered-down version of a fuel standard for ships and a global pricing mechanism for emissions was adopted. The measures are set to be formally adopted in October before entering into force from 2027 for large ocean ships going over 5,000 gross tons. It should be noted that the US had threatened reciprocal levies against nations that had agreed to impose a carbon penalty. And obviously, with all the chaos that is going on with supply chains right now, it does look like sustainability initiatives are unfortunately taking a back seat. Gav, you wrote about MEPC 83 in Premium last week. Do you have anything to add?
I mean, so the official title for this is the IMO Net Zero Framework. Progress is progress, however slow, was my sort of takeaway from it. I mean, the new legislation wasn't stringent enough to the environmental groups. Well, some of the ship-owning countries, I was thinking Cyprus and Greece, weren't happy about it because obviously there's a key industry for them. And naturally, all the oil-producing nations voted against it. But yeah, I mean, from 2028, we will have a global carbon pricing mechanism, which the IMO would said would probably raise around $10 billion a year. And that's set to be in reinvesting in developing alternative fuels, to then bring those prices down and make those type of fuels much more attractive to operators. On that, there is quite a wide spread at the moment. If you compare the prices of other fuels to the sort of most commonly used very low sulfur fuel oil, to some figures that I got from the Royal Shipping Council, which massively applauded. They thought it was a victory for the liner shipping industry. So, at the moment, LNG is 31% more expensive. Grey methanol is 53% more expensive. Grey methanol sounds like it has some really big emission problems on what they call the well-to-wake basis. Then it's bio-LNG is 111 times more expensive than the normal fuel. And green ammonia is 274% more expensive. So hopefully this will at least provide some sort of economic incentive to help shipping sort of decarbonize. And, you know, my own personal opinion is it needs to do. The last actual point is that it hasn't actually become law yet. That will happen at the MEPC's next meeting in London in October.
Thank you very much, Gav.
And you're very welcome, Charlotte.
So now we've got you up to date with all the main points from last week's supply chain news. Here is what you might see on the Lodestar this week. Well, if you're listening on Monday, there won't be any editorial coverage today as it's a bank holiday in England and we're not in the office. So apologies for that, but the rest of this week will continue as normal. We have a Drewry container market outlook on Thursday in the wake of Liberation Day, including updated global and regional port handling forecasts, a supply and demand outlook, and what it all means for freight rates and carrier profitability. It will also look into the export countries and the industry sectors that are the most exposed to the US import tariffs and early estimates of their impact on shippers' policies and reductions in shipping volumes. There is also a European short sea and feeder shipping conference in Bilbao called Coastlink. This is set to cover a number of topics, including the implementation of green corridors, supply chain logistics, and the energy transition. We are going to be tuning into that and giving you all the highlights on theloadstart.com. Earnings season has also begun once more, so we will have Kuna and Nagel reporting its Q1 results on the 24th of April. So keep an eye out for our report of that and the analysis on Desk One and Loadstar Premium. We also reported last week on an advisory from Maersk that port congestion across North European ports is set to increase. And that is due to various things like strikes, the new alliance networks bedding in, and low water levels. So we will see if that transpires this week or if the worst is behind us. Keep checking back on theloadstar.com for anything you need to know. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you next week.